Well, good morning and welcome to Green Zine here at WFVR-LP, South Royalton, Vermont. This piece is from Patrick Walsh. It's called Farmer's Market. Hey, the final Farmer's Market of the year at the South Royalton Farmer's Market is this Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Lots of vendors out about 10 days ago there. They might have like a little celebration coming up later in September, but this is the last official farmers markets. I think some of the other ones are going to go well into September. Let's acknowledge our underwriters here on Green Zine. We have Solaflect, also Bale, Building a Local Economy. They're a major sponsor of the Royalton Farmers Market. Tom Wells, who stopped by the studio earlier this morning. We hope to see him at our underwriters party on Sunday. Daniel Leibowitz, thank you. Lone Wolf, the Upper Pass Beer Company, just renewed their underwriting credit for about the 10th year in a row. First Branch Coffee Company, Solar Fest, Wit and Grit, and the Yes We Can Collective. Well, this is an instrumental. I think it gives me a chance to bring up my colleague. He's working over there. You ready to talk on the air, Henry?
I can be doing that.
There you are. Okay, I'll bring this down. How are you today?
I'm good. And boy, what beautiful weather.
Beautiful weather. It was beautiful where I was up in Mid-Coast Maine. Beautiful up there. Pretty warm. One day it was like 72.
Yes.
And on Mid-Coast, that was pretty warm. But yeah, really nice and really calm water one day. We went for an extended paddle, maybe one of the longest ones. We estimate it was, about 6 miles or so.
Whoa.
Around the Penobscot Bay. Checked out, wildlife sightings. Eagles, osprey, lots of cormorants. The biggest bird species that you're going to see in that part of Maine are seagulls. At least that's the generic name for them. Maybe porpoise. My partner was pretty sure that this school of fish that was coming up out of the water, that a porpoise was gobbling up a harbor porpoise. And I think that's about. Oh, sea ducks, of course. And it was a good time for sure.
Yeah. Well, I can comment on this morning. I was eating my breakfast and looking out my window, and there's a bumblebee out there, and there was a lone yellow flower, and I thought that was what the bumblebee was going to, but no, it was going to collect pollen from the top of a few strands of grass that had brown tops.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I didn't realize that goldenrod at this time of year was blooming, and a bumblebee was loaded big time with pollen up in Maine. It could barely fly.
Yeah.
It was really loaded up.
They do load up. And I think it's a major, honeybees are gathering more nectar, I think, than bumblebees. Bumblebees, pollen is a big piece of their survival kit.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, can I ask you a hornet or a hornet? I'm not sure if it was hornets or wasps. I'm going to go with hornets. So we had a nest in a little storage area that we have up in Maine, and it was getting bigger and bigger during the summer, and to get things out of there was kind of an adventure because you'd open the door and a couple of them would buzz out and you kind of reach in real quick and grab it. So we were ready to deal with it. We were not going to spray it with noxious chemicals. We probably would have waited till winter, but then they were gone. Now it gets really hot in there, so we didn't know what happens. When does a hornet or one of those big paper wasp
nests, yeah,
really big one though.
Yeah, they are nasty.
Do they vacate at a certain time of year, or did it just get too hot and they left? Or
I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. I know that they are that they take umbrance when you are in their vicinity, and they have a pretty good sting.
Okay, and that is a new word, folks, that you just heard from Henry. I like it. Umbrance rather than umbrage.
Yeah,
but it's kind of a combination. We'll figure out what that second word that combined
right.
with.
That's the nature of English. It reinvents itself all the time.
It does. It does. I'm trying to remember the word that I came up with. It was It was based on ostrich, ostrichify, or something like that. And just meant basically people that want to, you know, like with climate denialism, just stick their head in the sand and just try to ignore it, and maybe it'll go away.
Yes, it's funny how it doesn't really work out very well.
Yeah, ostrichism. That's what it is, ostrichism. Anyway, you are on Green Scene, Henry Swayze, live in the studio. We're able to be face-to-face, eye-to-eye, and we've got a pretty good show lined up. No guests today, but a lot of information to cover.
We do indeed. It's an information-loaded world.
Yeah.
We'll try to bring some humanity into this as well. Although I'm pretty tech-loaded today.
Well, at certain point, we'll slow things down if they start to go too fast.
That sounds like a good plan.
So what have you got lined up first there, Henry?
Well, we could jump right into Bird Note.
We could.
Let's do that.
All right. I've got it tuned up, and you've got it on your computer. I think we're ready to go.
This is Swallows or Swifts.
Is Bird Note. Swirling overhead, dozens of birds swoop and glide in pursuit of insects. Are they swallows or swifts? How in the world do you tell them apart? At a glance, swallows and swifts look much alike. They're graceful flyers on long, slender wings and all about the same size. But a closer look reveals key differences. Swifts have longer, even slimmer wings and relatively shorter bodies. Swifts also glide for longer periods. Their glides are punctuated by rapid, stiff bursts of wing beats. Movements so brisk, their wings seem to flicker. Swallows, on the other hand, flex and flap their wings. Why do swifts have such a peculiar, stiff wing stroke? Picture a typical bird wing, with two halves jointed in the middle. A swift's wing reveals an inner half that's extremely short, and an outer portion that's very long. This causes the stiffness. Try waving your arms with your elbows held against your body, and you'll get the idea. Another group of birds shares this distinctive wing structure, hummingbirds. And swifts are considered to be closely related to hummingbirds. Swallows, on the other hand, are songbirds, closer kin of birds like robins and wrens. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. This is Bird Note.
Go ahead.
All right. So I thought we might hear a word from Gus Speth, or at least his writing. And he's, you know, obviously feeling like the rest of people who are kind of environmentally oriented and trying to figure out where we go from here. And current administration, he's saying, you know, try this thinking out. This is a piece called Validation. When they try to rig elections, elections are still important. When they try to coerce the media, good journalism is still powerful. When they try to squirm and skirt court rulings, the rule of law is still there. When they fire even their own people, resistance is still strong. When corporations use government to block change, change is still happening. When they attack science, history, and education, the truth is still potent. When they call out the troops, their efforts to divert attention from failing are still failing. When we fight back against them, hope is still alive.
Yeah. Very different from his poem called Hopium, which he read on the air a couple weeks ago. Interesting contrast between what the current administration is doing, but what the reality is of carrying forth as responsible citizens of this planet.
Yes. Well, I think you have to find your own little niche to fight back, or else hope isn't feel alive anymore.
Well, speaking of hope, Henry, I'm going to jump right in with something here, and this is part of the pushback that's happening in the courts on so many fronts. Even though Vermont, there was a disagreement between the governor's office and our attorney general whether to join the suit to get the money back that was guaranteed in a bill passed during the Biden administration for high-speed charging along the interstates. Well, the governor's office is announcing today, this morning, that the Agency of Transportation, the funds have been released, nearly $16 million by the Federal Highway Administration for Vermont. Once again, it's called the NEVI program, which stands for National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure. So if you hear me say NEVI in the future, that's what it's referring to. So that is definitely coming back on the good news column.
It is indeed, and I called the governor's office to push back against.
Wow, very effective phone call.
No.
Way to go, Henry.
No, what they said was, well, we think there may be money coming through that very state highway program, and that's why we didn't file suit against the other piece that was bringing us charging money.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the other program that apparently could be brought back is called Solar for All, which Vermont, once again, was guaranteed a fair chunk of money. And that was for the development of solar that would be specifically targeted at low-income ratepayers.
Yes, and, I would have my hand up for that.
You should definitely have your hand up for that, Henry. We'll keep watching the breaking news feed as it comes in.
So I'll be amazing if we win back multiple federal money rather than having it all disappear.
Well, what's kind of amazing, or at least faster than expected, is a lot of these actions that are happening at both the state, but particularly the federal court level, are, you know, sort of maybe we'll end up going the state's ways and pushing back against unconstitutional actions by the executive, but maybe not really taking place as far as the pushback being successful until the end of his term. But some of these sort of changes are happening within just a few weeks or a few months of lawsuits being filed. So that's encouraging.
Yes, yes, there is. As Gus's little poem says, there is law even when the rule of law is being skirted.
Exactly. The principles are still there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So so I have been occasionally listening to a PRX show called Mic Drop, and they're into techy things in general, and they did a recent one on AI. And in particular, the fact that AI has been kind of built with Baylor Twine, and it's just grown on its own rambling self. The whole internet operation is not in any way an organized whole.
No, I think the term I often see, the phrase is without guardrails.
Yeah, well,
no guardrails. It's just running.
I think it's sort of like a cat's nest, one of those string games that you get totally, totally tangled up in, and they were saying that because of this kind of random build, it is actually quite energy inefficient, so it burns a lot of extra energy, and the power being used by AI doubled in the last 2 years and is scheduled to double again in the next 2 years. So it's starting to take up enough power so that it is increasing demand on the grid faster than EVs or heat pump for heating and cooling houses. And the grid has been lollycoddling along with almost no change in overall power demand for years and years and years. And AI is pushing it into how do we plan for the future. And they gave some examples of just how much energy it takes when you do a Google search, or when you, the one that I wrote down that just was mind-blowing, is that if you watch one TikTok video, that it's enough power to power a light bulb for 7 minutes. Just to give you a sense of out of sight, out of mind, I don't know about that, so it's not an issue.
Yeah.
And then the positive side of this is that it turns out that AI itself can look into those networks and help them to become 2, 3, 4, 5 times more efficient and make much better use of power than they currently are. So I'll put a link to that mic drop.
Interesting. We subscribe, the radio station subscribes to the Public Radio Exchange. I haven't been poking around for a public affairs program. We carry a few. We love to have them when they're live, like this one and like WordStream, etc. Does sound like a good show. I listened to, on the way back with my partner, a show on AI and education, particularly, high school education, middle school education, and they had a couple of experts on there. And there were definitely quite divergent viewpoints as far as in the classroom, should AI be used? Only on homework? Not at all. How are you going to police that? Is it helpful? Does it get in the way of critical thinking skills that need to be developed, you know, between the ages of 12 and 18 or so? So, but to go back to the energy thing, so let's say AI, which makes sense that it's clever enough to look and work on efficiencies, but it seems like this projection of power usage, not only in this country, but globally, because these data centers are being built around the world and using an amazing amount of extra energy that maybe a few years ago wasn't anticipated. But it seems to be baked in, but no matter one way or another, these are all going to be built, whether they're efficient or not, and that's it. No change there.
Right.
And is that really necessary for the survival of civilization to have endless data centers built, whether they're energy efficient or not?
Well, I'd like to see them be efficient.
Okay, at least efficient.
You know, you think of what, I mean, did we really need the cell phone and the smartphone that came along after basic communications? And you'd say no, but the reality is that for good and for bad, it has really changed the world, and it has changed the efficiency with which we get things done. And I think improved efficiency leads to better lifestyle, better. The fact that we consume more and more seems to me to be a negative, whatever you're consuming, whether it's Google searches or
TikTok.
Or whatever. I mean, just heightening consuming when it has an impact on the burden on the world, that needs to be thought about. So just one follow-on, which I also put a reference to, is the latest issue of Volts is dealing with sodium ion batteries. And so these are not as energy dense as lithium batteries, but they don't have any hard to get materials in them. They're environmentally way friendlier.
Yeah.
And they're ramping them up primarily for grid storage. And so that'll go along with the AI centers and making them greener, is you drop some lithium ion batteries in, then they can be powered by solar and wind, and not be driven so heavily by natural gas turbines, which is where a lot of the power currently is coming for AI.
So a comment and a question. So the comment is that this would be akin to somebody, let's say, we'll go off-grid now, who has batteries smaller than what we're talking about here, but for storage, and they know that if those batteries, like today, getting a full charge, they're going to be topped off. And let's say it rained for the next 2 days and the sun didn't come out. If the batteries were properly sized, that storage would get you through to when your natural source of energy supply returned. But these large storage, which actually over here off of Gilman Road, at least used to be known as Gilman Road, has a fairly large battery storage. So my follow-up question is that Green Mountain Power put in. My follow-up question is, because you said at the very beginning they're not as energy dense, in other words, it seems like it would probably take a larger container or larger area to save as much energy as the more toxic lithium ion batteries that are currently being used.
I think more importantly is it's heavier.
Heavier.
So it's not the first. They're not trying to point them at, say, EVs.
No, which are already heavy enough, even with the lithium ion, very heavy batteries.
But because lithium ion batteries require a lot of cooling, these sodium ion batteries don't require that same cooling.
Ah.
And so that allows you to shrink their footprint. So actually, in terms of a tractor trailer box like battery that's sitting there for utility use, they would come pretty close to getting the same amount of energy storage that you would with lithium ion, but you would come up with way cheaper and not nearly as dirty a mining procedure.
And also not as potentially, and I think some people get a little more nervous than they should about the combustibility of batteries of lithium, which has happened on occasion.
Right.
A former representative to the legislature had his Bolt battery catch on fire. Mine hasn't caught on fire yet.
No.
But nor yours. Good. All right. We're safe here at Green Zine. That's good. Well, you think that's going to be developed fairly quickly, these sodium batteries?
They said probably 2 years would be their first real implementation.
Okay.
But, you know, it takes time to ramp up. I mean, a lot of the same technologies that have made lithium ion batteries cheaper and cheaper, and have and the supply for them has not yet hit any constraints of lack of materials. So this is on a worldwide basis, and so they're hanging in, but these would be cheaper, as you say, less fire prone, and they could, part of that fire proneness is that they don't require all that cooling in order to, whereas a lithium ion, a big operation, or even in electric vehicle, lithium ion batteries, the reason they spread them out over the whole platform of the vehicle is to get cooling, because they are throwing away heat.
Right, right. So I'm going to go to a couple subjects which we haven't talked about recently, but it seems like these new batteries that are coming on. In a distributed grid or a microgrid situation, so that you have a downtown, a village center where a lot of buildings are close together, and let's say some of this unpredictable weather where we have outages and stuff, the overall grid goes down, it seems like that type of battery storage could be very good for resiliency during those outages on the overall wider grid.
So these people that they interviewed for Volt said that they were still aiming on very short-term storage, stuff that was 4 to maybe 8 hours of storage. So it's really a way of taking care of peak demand from the grid, spreading that peak demand out. And if you really want to look at seasonal demand and how do you take care of the peaking in the wintertime that will start to be an issue as more and more people move to heat pumps for heating their houses? That requires wind, probably. Wind blows harder in the winter, and you need to balance out your supplies. I mean, right now Vermont gets a lot of power from Hydro-Quebec. 45% of Vermont's electricity comes from Hydro-Quebec, thereabouts, I think is the current figure. And Hydro-Quebec has, we have long-term contracts with them, which has kept Vermont's power fairly cheap. Other parts of the country are paying way more for power than we are.
Right.
But Hydro-Quebec themselves have some problems that may or may not weigh in. And one of them is that they're getting less rainfall.
Well, I was going to bring that up. And so here's one of your homework tasks, Henry, to locate a Canadian hydrologist who knows about the history of rainfall and the amount of water that's in the rivers and lakes and dams, let's say 20 years ago or whenever Hydro-Quebec got started, and what the sort of the, if there has been a change up until now, if there are predicted changes in the amount of water to drive those turbines, because like you said, these are long-term contracts.
Yeah.
Is that amount of power that we're currently, is that really going to be guaranteed 15, 20 years from now if some of the desertification or drying up that's happening in various parts of North America continue?
Well, I have been, for today's program, I was trying to get Cyril Berman on the show.
Yeah.
And he's with the Vermont Electric Co-op and does their future planning for grids.
Okay.
And so I'm thinking maybe 3 weeks from now will be a slot for him. So
we'll return.
We'll see what he has to say about Hydro-Quebec as a dependable source. And the other thing that's happening, and I've never dug into the contracts with Hydro-Quebec, but we do have these long-term contracts, and they appear to allow us to ramp up and ramp down our power demand from Hydro-Quebec, that we don't have to just take so many kilowatts an hour nonstop. But I don't know exactly what the terms of that are.
So let's say that right now, actually Climate Forward from the New York Times, repeating a story that I'd heard somewhere else about our current executive, federal executive, to try not to say his name on the air, been against wind for a long time, way back when he was not even having political aspirations, and has shut down, at least at the moment, a major offshore wind plant that was about 80% to 90% complete.
It's crazy.
So kind of the white elephant wind project that was going to supply a lot of power.
Yeah.
But let's put an optimistic spin that, let's say, other sources of renewable energy become available, whether it's offshore wind or building out of solar. What you're saying is it's possible that as those ramp up, Vermont could decrease its dependence and within the contract with Hydro-Quebec.
Well,
maybe our guests can tell us about
that. I don't know the answer to that. And yeah. And what I'm curious about is with AI demand for power, whether that'll put a squeeze play on our current contracts or whether it'll only put a squeeze play on the contracts after these expire. And I don't know the answer to that one either, but I'm curious because AI, one of the things they do is they go to where power is cheap and they set up an AI center.
Right.
And so if you were to set it up near the power supply coming from with no transportation cost for the electricity, near a Hydro-Quebec generation facility, you can ship your data over fiber and not have a high transportation cost for the results of those. That
so I'm thinking back to our discussion last week with Bill McKibben. In fact, we should mention that show is still available on the replay right now until 1 o'clock tomorrow morning. It was a very interesting conversation with him, and he brought up the massive amount of solar panels that an authoritarian government, which we seem to be moving towards here, but not in a good way, but the government of China basically tells, you know, utilities, they're completely controlled by the government, what to do, that we could see, all right, you want to build a data center in our state or in our county, then you need to provide all of your own renewable power to run your data center, and you're not allowed to tap into the existing grid. You still want to build your data center? But, of course, we don't have that type of bossy authoritarianism here.
And so what happens now is they suck up that power, and that constrains the power grid, which means that the power grid has to find new sources of electricity or move it from further away. And that makes it more expensive for ratepayers because they're having to compete with and it turns into a blended product. It turns into you get your electricity bill is based on the price of power wherever it's coming from.
Yeah. So last week we mentioned that some unlikely states like Iowa and North and South Dakota actually have some of the lowest utility rates of any states in the country. And that is mainly because a lot of their power is coming from renewables in state that they have.
Yes.
It's interesting that I get power bills, or I should say we get power bills here in Vermont from Green Mountain Power. And I get a much smaller bill because we hardly use any electricity in Maine, but I do charge my vehicle there. Nothing else is coming from the grid. And I looked at the kilowatt hour charge, and it's roughly 2 to 1, Vermont twice as expensive as the utility in Maine that's supplying the power to charge up the EV.
So is that per kilowatt, or is that your overall cost of having a meter?
No, I looked at, just broke out the kilowatt. You know, they have a line that shows what the price per kilowatt hour. Then they have the other charges that you're going to get every month, which are also lower than Green Mountain Power.
Oh, they are.
Yeah. So
well, maybe we all better move to your yurt.
No, I think when we talk to your contact, did you say he's with Velco?
No, this is
different.
It's with Vermont Electric Co-op. So they cover the whole northern part of the state.
Okay.
And I went to them because they're a co-op, and I wasn't getting a discussion with Green Mountain Power on the future of the grid. They kept putting me off, and so I decided it's time to talk to someone else, and they're probably the second biggest utility in the state of Vermont.
That was a good move.
Burlington Electric might be the second. I'm not sure which one's bigger.
Yeah, and they're having some disputes there, but we've touched on utility companies enough and electricity.
We have.
Let's move on.
Okay, so so there's interesting there is, again, put it in the notes, and also Bill McKibben's, when sometime this afternoon, Bill McKibben's show will be in our show notes. So after it's not available in replay, you'll be able to get it.
So you have downloaded a file.
I've downloaded a file of last year's.
I didn't want to lose that show.
Very, very hard for me to upgrade the website with those shows. I try 5, 6, 7 times, and they don't stick. And I find I can do it right after our Greenzine show most reliably. It almost always allows me to do it in that 12 to 1 o'clock zone on Thursdays. I tried it last night at 11:30 at night, and it wouldn't do it.
Okay, but it is there now.
It will be there.
It will be there.
It will be there.
You're talking about between 12 and 1 today? Immediately
12
after,
and 1 today.
So you're rushing home, or are you going to do it from
no,
here?
No, I'll do it here.
Okay, all right.
before I lose that window.
Keep the window open for Henry just until 1. Yeah.
So there's a company called Fast Company, World-Changing Ideas for 2025. And they've done this each year. And this is the company's annual World-Changing Ideas list of honors businesses and organizations driving meaningful change in the world. I think there's perhaps 100 of them, and I pulled out just a few. So there's one called Bee Home. Perhaps half of the honeybee colonies died in 2023, a major concern for global food production, because bees pollinate a third of our crops. I won't get into the other kinds of bees that pollinate as well. A big factor is deadly mites like the Verona mite. Robotics keep beekeeping company BeeWise launched the fourth version of its Bee Home in 2024 with a heat chamber that kills 99% of the Verona mites without using chemicals, and that can harm bees and disrupt bee production and lead to mites developing a resistance to those insecticides and fungicides. I'm not sure what they are. The remote autonomous systems uses AI to apply heat when and where necessary. The company also partnered with Auburn University to test the chamber in Thailand against the fast-spreading Asian another mite, and it killed 100% of those exposed. So there's a kind of a neat, it uses AI, so it's a little bit of electricity being used in the background, but probably not significant compared to keeping bees alive.
So I know you've got other things on the list, but is this happening in a hive? I mean, where are they?
In a hive.
These are mites that are on the bees, but it's not harming the bees, the electricity or the waves that are killing the mites.
It's heating.
It's heating.
It's generating a heating chamber that the bees apparently have to pass through and kills off the mite. It basically is a mite stripper.
Okay. All right. That's
so. Yeah. It's just amazing the technology and the things that are out there that are working in a plus factor instead of being so net zero homes. Singapore based Billion Bricks is tracking two of the world's toughest problems simultaneously: climate change and affordable housing. The comp company builds communities of net zero homes with solar roofs that create a surplus of power that can extend to neighborhood and communities. This allows the homeowner to actually generate an income enough to reduce mortgage by 20%. In an early community of 24 homes, the Quezon City, Philippines, Billion Bricks demonstrated that each home can produce 10 kilowatt of energy, five times more than the energy that it consumes at a scale a community of 15, at that scale, a community of 1,500 homes could power 7,500 homes with a net zero carbon footprint.
So a 5-to-1 ratio of energy produced versus energy used per unit. That's
so they're
impressive.
So they're building a fairly efficient house to start with, and then they're putting way more solar on it than they're using the whole rooftop for solar, and it's outperforming. It's something that could happen here.
And that is happening. I think you mentioned Indonesia and maybe Korea there. So the government must be pretty heavily involved with allowing that type of energy sharing.
Yeah. I'm sure that that's part of the hurdles that we have is to get the regulations mm-hmm. to allow us to do things like balcony solar.
Right. We talked about last week.
Another one on large-scale solar grazing. So there is a...
This one's right up your alley.
Yeah. So so there is a 10,000-acre solar field in Texas. 10,000. Think of that scale.
Acre.
And they put 6,000 sheep on it to graze it down, and they made money from the sheep, and they sheep thrived, and on.
But that was covered with solar panels?
Solar panels. 10,000 acres of solar panels.
Wow.
Bet there'd be some pretty good soaring thermals right over that.
Oh, no. We're trying to keep you safe, Henry. We're not letting you go to Texas, because they might not let you out of there.
So another one, advanced liquid cooling for data centers. Data centers produce excessive amounts of heat. They don't have any use for the heat. And as the AI boom continues, demand is expected to surge, becoming responsible for 4% of the world's power consumption by 2030. So there's their projection. Centers dedicated at least a third of their total energy usage to cooling. So there's kind of wasted energy just having to cool themselves.
And to go sort of back, but also I think currently, certainly nuclear power plants, I don't know about other natural gas power plants, but most of the cooling is happening with millions, millions, and millions of gallons of water.
Yes, and AI centers are using a lot of water. In this link, but that is absolutely true.
So to go back to sharing a little bit, if there's this excessive heat, and thinking we had at least a brief discussion, I think we're going to come back to thermal networks again. Would that be sort of like the ground source energy, except it's coming from the excessive heat from a data center that could end up heating a lot of other buildings nearby?
So Nexalis has a proprietary cooling system, recoups that wasted energy, reduces energy usage by 35%. And then a standard 20-megawatt data center could reduce emissions by 23,000 tons annually. That's of carbon, and heat up to 600 homes in nearby communities.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's distributed. That's like geothermal community storage.
Hmm. Now, where's that company from? Is that a European company or American?
I think this is in America.
Okay.
Let's see. Just curious. I did not go to their website to look them up.
What was the name of it again?
Nexalus. Nexalus.
Oh, okay.
I think they're a U.S. country.
Could be.
Hewlett-Packard is working with them for test modeling for this. So iron nitride magnets. So currently the strong magnets that are used in electric motors, electric cars, a lot of those are using rare earth materials. And those rare earth materials, again, are dirty to mine and are expensive to mine. And this company, Nitride Magnets, has developed a magnet which is simply iron and nitrogen fused together in some sort of a furnace process, and it makes a very strong magnet, a permanent magnet that lasts well and will work in EVs and wind turbines and especially with small motors. They allow for the development of small motors. And that's a process that will use 80% recycled water and 97% hydrogen. I would think hydrogen is probably the heating element to allow it to produce these magnets. And right now they've used them to build a speaker system at the CES, which trade show in Las Vegas. That's I should tell you, know what those codes are, but that's a big energy trade show. So on the subject of motors, get down to my motors.
Where did those motors go? Hey, while you're looking for that, Henry, real quick, I'm going to reference our local paper, The Herald. It comes out on Thursdays, the White River Valley Herald. Interesting story. Of course, we are still a very agricultural state, particularly in this rural section. A story written by one of UVM's Community News Service, a student. It's great to see young people helping out in media and planning for careers in journalism, because we know that journalism, particularly newspapers and radio stations, have been kind of on the back foot, particularly with recent changes in the administration. The headline for this story, as CSAs adapt to climate change, members see changes. And I would highly recommend you check that out. It's in today's Herald on page A2, just above a story exploring shrub swamps, which is taken from the outside story. And I just got a note earlier this morning that the fall issue of Northern Woodlands is being released this week. So, Henry, were you able to find those motors?
I did.
Okay.
It's the name of that company, and this is in an incubator from the Rocky Mountain Institute.
Amory Lovins.
Yeah, Amory Lovins.
Yeah, the founding guy out there.
And they are they're into all kinds of things to try and put the world standing back on its feet right. Amory Lovins himself is extremely highly focused on increasing efficiency, having extreme efficiency. But the Rocky Mountain Institute as a whole does get into many other things. And they have a they select a group of companies that have forward-looking technological things they're doing, and they span not just energy. They get into medicine and all nature of other things. But one of the companies that they are supporting in turning into a production company from an idea is Taurus Robotics, and that's accelerating the rate of climate innovation by delivering ultra-efficient, compact, axial flux motors that drive drastically reduced energy use in industrial heating and ventilation, air conditioning, and mobility applications. So these are little tiny motors with a great big kick, and they use magnets as part of that.
Back to magnets.
Part of that core.
Yeah.
Complete that magnetic loop. Other things from Rocky Mountain Institute. So cooling rooftops are one of the things, and there's a company again that are that Rocky Mountain Institute is supporting in the startup phase, which has a roof material that is reflective, but also has insulation capacity in it as well. And so it reduces solar heating of rooftops and keeps heat in the building during the wintertime as well. So just another one. And electric vehicles are the key to winning China's climate fight. So China has definitely focused, partly driven to it because it was killing its population with the pollution, the air pollution from its coal-fired power plants, quite separate of. And it's also very aware that all of its food production area is on the coastline and all of it's getting flooding. And so they are there, if you look at it as a big puzzle, climate change is doing them an enormous amount of human damage. And they said, all right, well, how do we fix these things? And one of the things they did is said, well, let's get the heck off of fossil fuel. And they ramped up electric vehicles. And they're now at 35% of their fleet is electric. Vermont, I think we're 16 at this point.
Up to 16?
I think they're up to 16.
Okay, I think that includes hybrids and
yeah, I think it does. I think it.
Which is okay.
I think it includes plug-in hybrids. Plug-in hybrids.
Yeah.
Not just hybrids.
And just, you know, to fool around with statistics, I believe that, the major manufacturer of the Chinese EVs is a company called BYD. And yeah, they're selling a lot in China, probably elsewhere in the Far East, but I believe they are currently, based on tariffs, et cetera, not able to sell their vehicles either in the EU or in the United States. Now, I'm not advocating one way or another, but it is a large world out there with a lot of capitalist concerns and countries like China, which has sort of adopted a hybrid capitalism. But command and control, once again, there, where the government sees a major problem, it doesn't have to do a whole lot of debate. It just says, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to do it quickly.
And China in particular has targeted particular industries and said, all right, we're going to put so much support behind this industry that it becomes highly efficient and becomes a world leader. And that has happened not necessarily always with China, but with countries that have done this. Shoe manufacturing used to be in the United States. There was a tremendous amount of it.
Yeah.
And governments elsewhere in the world put subsidies on it, and we lost our shoe manufacturing. Fasteners, that's nuts, bolts, screws, the things you use for construction, those things used to be, U.S. used to be a world leader in producing those.
And even the state of Vermont in that particular sector, I'm thinking of Springfield, Vermont, was a major manufacturing of gears and screws and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So they Springfield produced the means of mass production. So they made the machine tools that then would allow you to build build industry that made replicable parts.
Mm.
So those things have been targeted one at a time, and China's doing it with solar panels and EVs right now. And it's, in a way, if they can do it cheaper and better and produce a really quality product, why not?
Yep.
I have a piece of music that we could go out with if you want to do that.
We could do that. We should do just a couple of things. One, very important, when we are so fortunate, in fact, we're going to be celebrating one of our alumni, a recent alumni, who hosted One Planet Groove this Sunday. But we're also going to be fetting, I think is the correct word, our underwriters. They all invited to a special station party that we're putting on. And hopefully a lot of the folks here that are part of our underwriting team on GreenZine will be able to attend. And they include Solaflect, Bale, Building a Local Economy. We'll be in touch with them soon. Royal Tom Wells, who is planning to come. Daniel Leibowitz, he's a little bit far away. He's down in Washington. But thank you, Daniel. The Upper Pass Beer Company, First Branch Coffee Company, Solar Fest, Wit and Grit, and the Yes We Can Collective. Orion is announcing an issue coming out pretty soon. I'll be probably getting that in the mailbox, so we'll talk a little bit more about them then. But I think you do have some music there, Henry.
Yes, and next week we'll probably finally get ourselves into geothermal energy within South Royalton community.
All right, we're looking forward to it. Another future guest will be Raluca Viduca, who's been here before. She's putting together a window dressers campaign in Bethel that will also include the towns of Tunbridge and Royalton. And I think she's coming in sometime later in September.
So I attended Mammoos last night, and this is one of the songs they sung, The Power of Kindness.
All right, let's hear it. Thanks for joining us on GreenZine, WFERLP, South Royalton. Thanks, Henry.
I believe in the power of kindness. Ooh, I believe in the power of love. Ooh, I believe in the power of kindness. Ooh, I believe in the power of love. We don't know what's coming, but we can help shape what's ahead. Kindness as our currency, the commonwealth is in our hands. So give a little all, give a lot, don't stop. A helping hand makes the world go round, there's more than enough. Ooh, I believe in the power of kindness. Ooh, I believe in the power of love, power of love. Ooh, I believe in the power of kindness.
Kindness.
Ooh, I believe in the power of love. Look up now, people, but keep your ear to the ground. We are the river flowing, generosity abounds. So give a little all, give a lot, don't stop. Helping hand makes the world go round, there's more than enough. Ooh, I believe in the power of kindness. Ooh, I believe in the power of love. Power of love. Ooh, I believe in the power of kindness. Ooh, I believe in the power of love. Honeybees serve sweetness only to help the world bloom, bringing love to the flower, from the flower to the fruit. We could learn a thing or two. So give a little.